You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hi, teachers. It's wonderful that you're here with me again for another episode of the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Thanks for joining me. And thank you on behalf of your students for continuing your professional development by listening to podcasts. And if you're listening to this show, no doubt you're listening to other ones. You're probably taking courses, trying out new music, and all those things that we should be doing as good teachers who are excited to continue to develop our own teaching and to make sure our lessons are as fun and exciting as possible for students. Today's episode, we're going to be talking a bit about some of those feelings of burnout and stress that we can get from not having the most streamlined studio. That's one of the things that we're going to be talking about. We're also going to be unpacking how one teacher in particular has converted to a group program and how that's going, and also talking about games that you can do in your studio that don't require any equipment or laminated cards or packs of cards or anything like that, just things that are lying around at home that you can use to really engage your students in some fun activities. Now, our podcast freebie for this week is our Creativity Kickstarter Bundle. Now, if you haven't seen this, this is just a fantastic pack of freebies that you can use to get started with being creative in your studio. So it's a pack of five, actually maybe six, one-page downloads that give you a simple musical idea that you can explore with your students to both deepen their understanding of music, but also at the same time having a heap of fun. The activities in the sheets can be used with students of all ages and skill levels because they don't require any reading or prior knowledge. So they're perfect for little five-minute lesson breaks or for when students forget their music, or you can use them for summer camps or when you just want to change things up a little bit, or maybe after the exam period, which is coming up here in Australia and the UK. What do you want to do after the exams? We can definitely have some fun with these creativity Kickstarters. So I'm going to challenge you to go and download these. It's over at topmusic.co/Kickstarter. One word. And I want to challenge you to download these worksheets and just choose one activity to try with one student in the next week or so, because you're going to be amazed at how easy it is to get creative with just a simple idea that your students will love. So what are you going to get in the pack? You get five of our most popular creativity Kickstarters. They're just one-page PDFs. Plus, we're going to throw in a bonus, which is my Elton-esque filler, which comes from one of my really popular YouTube videos about how to sound a bit like Elton John. And if you've heard about things like four-chord composing or the scale vamp or anything to do with the composing and pop song progressions that we've been talking about, then these are one of the best introductions to it, because you just get one page, one idea that you can go and use with your students. And if you really enjoy it and your students love it, which I'm sure they will, you may want to come back for more and explore some of our other more in-depth resources for things like composing, playing the blues, and pop songs. So head over to topmusic.co/Kickstarter, go and grab that today, totally free, and let me know how you go with it. Well, I actually heard my guest being interviewed on another podcast, and I was just struck by the name of her studio. So she's going to announce the name of her studio really soon. If you haven't read the title of this episode, you won't know it. It's a classic, and it just is tongue-in-cheek, and it just made me go, I reckon Jess is going to be a fun person to chat to, and I think you'll find the same once we get into today's episode. So Jess Homewood is a private piano studio owner and resource curator. She's a creative mind behind the No Printout Playbook, Volumes 1 and 2, offering minimal prep piano games for at-home learning. Balancing studio ownership and motherhood, Jess inspires piano educators to regain time, family balance, and passion for their music careers. She's been featured on the Dynamic Piano Teaching Podcast and Music Notes, and has professional collaborations with Successful Group Lessons and The Cascade Method. Hey, Datara, if you're listening. Jess, welcome to the show. It's great to meet you.
Hey, thanks so much, Tim. I'm really happy to be here. It's a pleasure.
Well, I heard you actually on the Dynamic Piano Teaching Podcast, and I thought, oh my goodness, this person has to come on my show, because the name of your studio, it just summed everything up. So tell everybody the name of your studio and why you chose that.
Yes. So I remember when I recorded the episode with Rachel, I really struggled with actually saying the name because it's kind of a mouthful. But the name of my studio is Not Your Mother's Piano Studio. A lot of people kind of giggle at the name because it is kind of wacky. And honestly, it really sums up my feelings about music teaching nowadays. I was taught, like many other piano teachers, in a very like traditional sense. It was a very competitive environment. It was structured. It was rigid. It was only classical music. I didn't get to play very many like fun pieces. And yeah, it was not something that I would probably see my current students sticking with. Not to like dump on that style of teaching. I think it's actually what I needed to have in a teacher to survive and to thrive as a piano student. But with that being said, I don't think the majority of my studio probably would have stuck with that style of teaching had I replicated it. So just stepping away from a very traditional and into kind of a loose and silly and fun piano teaching environment.
I think we're absolutely on the same page there. And I think that traditional classical style of teaching does suit some students, but I think it's the minority. And it's, I think over the last 30 years, that percentage that it suits has just got smaller and smaller until we're literally, I think, down to the 1 to 3 percenters who are just like, okay, competitions, classical music, technique, let's go. Really, in order to, as you say, appeal to the masses of the 98% of our studio, we do have to do things differently. And that's why I really love this take. I don't know if you know, but I have shirts which I've got printed on it, not how I was taught in a piano.
Wait,
let me see if
no,
I might be able
awesome.
To find one. Well, give me one sec.
Okay. Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I need one of these. I had no idea. That's awesome.
That's
so
why,
yes, that is exactly why my studio is called this.
Exactly. I always get comments when I wear that at conferences. People are like, I see what you're doing there. That's clever. All right. So tell me,
I'm sure
tell me about
fantastic.
Your studio today. So whereabouts are you? What kind of numbers do you have? What ages do you teach? That sort of thing.
Yeah. So complicated story. I was born and raised in San Diego, California. And that's where I started my studio, signing my first student up at 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
And
you really started early.
Yes, I was pretty young. But, you know, I met my husband and he has a very intricate medical career that takes him all over the country. So each place that we've moved, I've been to Texas now, Utah, now we live in Ohio. I have started my piano studio from scratch.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't know that virtual lessons was a thing. Yes. I didn't know it was a thing until COVID. And so I just thought I had to start over each place I moved.
And so if you were, when did you move to Ohio? Was that post-COVID and therefore you went quite online? Or would that be if you moved, had to move again?
Yes. So I moved to Ohio like in the dead of COVID, like it was like May of 2020. So a lot of students did do virtual, but actually there was a huge market for students that wanted to stay in person. And we just took extra precautions. And because a lot of their piano teachers had quit. So there was this influx of students really desiring that connection still. And we just were super careful and did our best to navigate the complexities of the pandemic.
So what kind of breakdown do you have now of online and in-person students?
Yeah, so I would say the majority now is in person. So we have a 60-person studio. I do have
60.
An assistant piano teacher. Yes, we have hit that number and I'm excited about it. But I do have a handful that I still teach for my Texas studio, actually. And I would say that's, you know, probably four or five now out of 60 still are virtual.
And I'm assuming you're teaching groups if you're teaching 60 in a week.
Yes, I have a mix though. So I teach private lessons and group lessons, and group has been fairly new within the last 6 months.
Oh, okay. All right. So let's unpack this a little bit, because I know there's lots of teachers looking at group teaching options, combinations, crossovers, like there's so many different ways to do this. So take us through. You've only just been teaching groups for about 6 months. What size groups are you teaching, firstly, and why did you decide to go down that path?
Okay, so my groups currently are 4 students. That is the max that I'll take per group. And originally, I was not looking for group lessons. It was not on my mind. I was comfortable and happy teaching private lessons. But I am an avid podcaster, as I'm sure you are since you run a podcast. And I was listening to a music teaching professional called Daniel Patterson. He owns Grow Your Music Studio. And
he's been on our show a couple of times.
Of course. Yeah, so he is amazing. And he brought up this idea of group lessons. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is so interesting. Because at the time that I had heard about it, I had several private students that were plateauing in their lessons. And I had tried everything. I had tried the games, the fun songs, you know, really just helping them feel the music. And I felt like nothing was working. And it wasn't until I heard about group lessons that I realized what was missing for my private lessons for these students was connection. And that's the basis of music, is connection. And I really was excited about this idea because I wanted these students to build relationships with their peers, not just with me. We had that relationship, but being able to work with students their age, their level, and experience music as a community instead of just as a transactional lesson.
And did you feel that it's had the effect that you hoped for in the social connection, the strengthening, the keeping those students who may have been unredeemable otherwise with all your different things that you tried?
So, yes, it has been incredible. The students that, you know, showed up and they were there and they were happy to be there, but they weren't jumping out of their seat excited for piano. They come now excited. They let themselves in. They sit down right away, talk with their peers. I mean, their smiles just like tell it all. It's such an incredible transformation. And then the feedback that I get from the parents is amazing. They say that their kids are actually practicing more at home because they're learning how to practice in their group lessons. And they have peers to help keep them accountable for that.
And when you decided to go into groups, did you change people from one-on-one into groups? Or did you just bring in new people that were interested? Okay, you're in a group. This is all I offer kind of to new people. Because a lot of teachers struggle with the challenge. How do I actually sell this to my one-on-one parents that we're now going to group? So which way did you take it?
So a little bit of both, actually. It is a unique challenge to take your current student body and student families and say, hey, look, like there is a wonderful opportunity here. It's totally different from what you're used to. But, and I wouldn't say convincing is the right word, but when you believe in something and you express that belief to your parents and students that hopefully trust you, if they're still with you, hopefully they trust you, and you are able to transfer some of that belief to them, then I feel like it gets a little bit easier. There are these wonderful tools that Daniel does provide. I took his course, Successful Group Lessons, and he has wonderful marketing tools and email templates of how you can actually communicate it in a way that conveys that belief and faith that you have in this really unique structure. And then, you know, I do have those students that right away they started in group lessons and they had no questions.
Right. And moving forward from now on, will you only bring new people into group lessons?
You know, that's a really good question. And I've thought about that as we are ending my husband's medical training here in Ohio and we're going to relocate back to Arizona.
Oh my goodness. Are you already, you've got another move planned yes. already. Oh gosh.
Oh yes. But that's the last one. At least I told my husband that's the last one. I'm done after this.
Wow. Okay.
But I've just grappled with the idea of, okay, do I, you know, just do groups, but I do, there is certain students that I do feel like would do better in private. I don't think group is for every student. And I know that that may be an unpopular opinion, but there are some students that suffer from severe like social anxieties or other things that would prevent them from really engaging well with a group.
Mm, I think there's also neurodiversity. I mean, there's lots of things that could mean that one-on-one mm-hmm. is a better option for students. So I think it's, you would say that the bulk of your students would come into groups, and but you would never say never if the right opportunity comes along for a student and that's the right outcome for them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And with the groups, are they mainly, because you mentioned the social aspect, and I'm a big believer in this. When I look back on my own childhood, teenagehood, young adulthood, all the things I remember musically, they're not the practice sessions. It's not even the lessons with my teachers. It's mainly playing with other people and jamming or playing for church or accompanying singers or accompanying assembly at school or whatever it was. Those were the things I remember. So I agree very much with that. And I think most teachers looking back would probably go, oh, yeah, they are the things I remember too. That said, when you bring your groups together, are you mainly trying to get kids who are on the same level, same age, in order to get that social collaboration? Because if you've got a 14-year-old and a 7-year-old, then that's not going to be the same, right?
This is true, yes. So there is a certain spectrum that I let students come in where they are a couple different levels and ages apart. So not everybody is in the same level. I would say like my sweet spot right now is, you know, two levels apart or 2 years apart in age. The reason why I think that works is because my group lessons have a different structure. Like I said, I kind of follow Daniel's and give it my own little fun twist where the first, you know, 15-minute block of my groups is actually on headphones and students aren't getting that as much peer-to-peer interaction. They're working on their own and I'm helping each student. And then my next block of like 15 to 20 minutes, that's when everybody hangs up their headphones. And well, sometimes we all play like an ensemble or something together, or we have those group games that give, you know, students a chance to get silly, get their wiggles out, you know, be a little crazy, but still be educational. And then our last 15 minutes are spent really working the material and the tiny details for each student. So it's, they do still get an element of like working one-on-one with me, but with a fun kind of community twist to it.
You mentioned games, and I know you're really passionate about games. And particularly, I think one of the things you really enjoy is helping other teachers create games with objects that they've got lying around. And so they don't have to go and buy packets of games necessarily or things like that. Is that right? And I wonder how that works for you and how did you get into exploring this as something that you enjoy?
Yes. So how I got into it is a little selfish. I'm not going to lie. I am a mom of two really little kids. So I've got two toddlers, 4 and 2. And I found that I could not keep up with all of the printing and the laminating and cutting of the cute. I mean, there's so many cute game materials out there by amazing and brilliant creative people. But I wasn't able to lesson prep as much as I would like to because I'm also taking care of my kids in my home. So, you know, originally I just tried to get creative with things I had around the house. I have these toy cars that my son has, or I have like pots and pans that, you know, students can drum on. And I'm like, they work just as well as like buying like official drums from Amazon. And they're kind of silly. Like it lets students see that things don't always need to be neat and pretty and like wrapped up in a box, but you can make music with the tiniest things around you. And eventually I started to realize that other piano teachers, other really busy moms that were teaching piano or just teachers that wore multiple hats had the same issue. They were spending hours planning these lessons and games and like losing these papers or they get crumpled or whatever happened to them. And it was just a point of frustration for them. And I was like, well, like I've been doing this for years now. I'll just put all of these ideas, these random ideas into kind of some paperwork and start sharing it with teachers that also have a similar problem that I have.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. Right. So have you got an example or two of something that teachers who are listening who are like, oh, what would I actually do with pots and pans or a rubber band or a toy car or whatever it is? Have you got a couple of examples you can share?
Yes, absolutely. So I will say that, you know, although I have my own creative games, you're going to laugh at this because one of the first, like, no prep, no supply games that I played was actually one of yours. Oh. I came across you years ago and it was Frog and Snake.
Yes.
Where you kind of go down the piano and try to catch the student as they play all of the keys. They love it. So that's one idea that I know that students love. But some of my own ideas that I've come up with is, you know, if you have been born in the 90s, I'm sure you grew up with the game Twister being in the house. I don't know if that's an American game. Do you guys have Twister?
No, we have it as well. Yeah, I think that's a global one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So with Twister, I just had it lying around and I took it out of the box and I just wrote music alphabet letters on every single one of the colored circles. And then for the students, so I only had to prep it once. It's already like Sharpied out, it's done. So I can just pull it out each time. And then when students come into play, whether it's like private lesson or a group lesson activity, I have a music flashcard with a note they have to read. And then we spin the dial and then the kid has to put their right foot on a green G. And then they put their right foot on green G. And
so they're reading the notation on the card and they have to go, yes. Oh yeah, that's a G and it's green or whatever. And I put my foot there.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So that's one of, I think, the most highly requested games for students. And then another one that I thought of that I personally like because there's no supplies involved is called Musical Motions. And it's where a student pulls out one of their old assignments or even current assignments, and we assign actions to different note values. So let's say like quarter note could be like touching your nose, and then half note is like hopping two times. I've even had some students try to get crazy on me and they do the splits for like four counts for the whole note. And that's when I'm like, no, that's all you. I'm not doing the splits in this lesson. But I try to do the actions with the kids. And then once we have all of our actions picked, we go through, let's say, the melody line of a song. And instead of playing it, we're only doing the actions. I know no one can like see me as I'm doing like little things. Yes, for the rhythm. So it's teaching them rhythm, but also getting them to, you know, kind of get off the bench and experience a little bit of like movement in their lessons.
And have a laugh and some wacky fun, which is just critical, right? And I know a lot of teachers are looking for those activities that can just break up an on-bench time, particularly for younger students who to get wriggly, break them up, get them off the bench, do something wacky, come back. I think that's great. Well, very creative.
Thank you.
And do you share these ideas on your website?
Yes. So I just within the last year created a downloadable PDF booklet called the Ultimate No Printout Playbook. Where all of my games are, like I said, with no printering is what I call it. But basically, just like with these things around the house, some of the games don't have any supplies at all, but they can just pull out in a moment's notice, whether, you know, you're working with a student on a song and that student is just really not getting their note reading. And you're like, how can I help this student? I didn't prep a game, but I have like some of these like little toy cars in the corner, or I have these little bean bags that we can throw into buckets. How can we turn this into a game? So it gives teachers kind of that creative spark to start thinking using my own game ideas. But yeah, you can just find that on my website. And then it's organized by note reading, rhythm, theory, additional theory work, and then also keyboard exploration.
Fantastic. Well, you mentioned earlier that you are a busy mum. You've got groups. You've got another teacher, I think you said as well. There's a lot going on. And one of the other things that you've told me that you're passionate about is streamlining, helping teachers streamline and simplify. And I think we can all do with help with that. So what do you feel are some of the main contributors to teachers who are feeling a bit overwhelmed or burnt out by their studios at the moment?
Yeah, I think there are two primary things that are impacting students' energy and their burnout. And I think, you know, just recently, at least for me, I feel like I've recently discovered kind of an online presence of piano teachers. And with any type of social media, there comes this level of comparison. So, you know, when we see our friends post about their family vacations or, you know, their happy, you know, kids that actually behave, we compare our lives to them. And we also do that in our businesses as well. So we start to see, you know, these teachers implementing these really cool ideas, or, you know, they have this like really successful studio. They take pictures of these massive, you know, studio or students of recitals, and you start comparing, well, I feel like I need to be doing that. And I'm not doing enough because I don't play this game with my students. And so my lessons must be too boring. And I think teachers tend to get caught in that shiny object syndrome, where they start collecting a bunch of different things, and then they have too many things and too many options. And it's not only overwhelming for them, but it's also overwhelming for the student, I think. But that's just, I think, one of them. I think the other one too, and I think this is a big part of it, another reason for burnout is that many teachers are stuck in the rut of the only way I can make an income as a music professional is teaching back-to-back private lessons all day long. I mean, you have teachers working late into the night, and they're not spending dinner with their family. They're not spending time with their kids after school. They don't have those relationships with the people they love. And we are starting to see a good shift in moving out of this traditional mindset of how you can have a successful music career. And now there's options like group lessons as a way to scale your income. You can create courses for students, you know, and how you teach. And there's just so many other ways that you can make it as a music professional. But I think that message do needs to get out more and more in terms of, you know, there's more ways that you can make it as a music teaching professional than just working yourself to death and burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. And that impact on family life, social life, I think is a huge one, particularly when teachers are only teaching after school students. And they lose 3 till 7 p.m. And if they're parents, they're losing that time with their children. Yeah, that is a big, it's a really tough one. And so you've mentioned, obviously, yes, you can potentially look at group lessons or combinations of overlapping lessons or 2 students, 3 students, whatever it is. There's lots of different options, and we've talked about them before on the show. I guess another idea you were hinting at was more of a portfolio career, so doing other things to bring income in. So I just wonder if you've got some suggestions for teachers on options. So let's say they're not really ready for group lessons, because that can be a leap. It can also be impractical for some teachers. Have you got any other suggestions of just simple ways that they can start looking past that daily grind?
Yeah, there is, you know, little things that you can start doing. I know a big one for me recently, I feel like I'm a little bit late to the game on this, but I feel like it's upgraded my tuition policy to be a flat, like monthly rate tuition where I delete makeup lessons. And it doesn't feel like you're doing that much to like bring in extra income. But when you think about all of the times that you refund credits to your students' families, that is a way to maintain a more consistent income stream and really start to budget with your income. Whereas I wasn't able to budget before because you'd have Christmas, you only taught 2, you know, lessons during the month of December or whatever. But a couple of other ideas that I've kind of implemented for me is I sign up for affiliate programs for my books that I use. There are certain books that I love in my studio, and a lot of larger companies they do have these affiliate programs where it doesn't cost the student's family anything extra to order through your link, but you're getting a small commission off of that. And if you do have a larger studio, 30, 40, 50, 60 plus students, and all of them are getting books through your link, it's a decent size that you can bring in to start upgrading your instruments, you know, paying for like cool new software and digital games for your studio. I also think that courses are a really big thing now. And if you have a specific, now course is a big endeavor, kind of like group lessons, that does take a little bit more time. But if you put in the time and effort, if you feel like you have a really niche style of teaching or concept that you do really, really well, one of my friends in the Instagram community knows how to teach adults extremely well. And she has just really done it in a form of, or it's just pure art. Like she just does a beautiful job and she's able to just focus her energy on that and produce that and get that out to as many adults as possible. Now that's bringing in a decent income for her as well. So there's options for us now that I don't think existed as much as it did before.
Mm, absolutely. The internet has opened up many pathways for potential income generation. And even just the time we had during COVID where we all had to go online has potentially opened up the opportunity, if you're comfortable teaching at least some lessons online, that you can teach students in other time zones at other times of the day. So can you be teaching between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. some students somewhere else that you wouldn't otherwise be able to? Or homeschoolers, I know that's another big area in America in particular. You know, what are those options? And I think it's great that you're bringing these up.
Yes, and I think we're seeing more of a homeschooling shift. At least we are here in Ohio. And that more parents are choosing to do homeschooling programs. And I think, you know, in the beginning of when I started teaching in Ohio, there was only, I think, a few students that that did the homeschooling program. And now I would say that I have 8 or 9 students that are now homeschooled. So it does provide some flexibility. I know when I moved to Arizona, I'm very excited that Ohio will be like 3 hours ahead of me. So I'll be able to teach some of my students that wish to stay with me during when my kids are in school. So yeah, virtual lessons is a great way as well to kind of work around those odd teaching hours.
Perfect. Yes. We've been encouraging teachers to look at those kind of options for many years. I built my own course actually called Music Teacher Startup, all about helping teachers create online courses or launch memberships or podcasts or whatever it is. There are lots of opportunities out there.
Oh, yes. And
none of them were available really 10 plus years ago. So it is an exciting time if we're happy to, as you say, look beyond the standard lesson template that a lot of us were brought up on.
Yes.
Wow. Well, look, thank you very much for sharing all those ideas, Jessica. Whereabouts should people go if they want to find out more about that games book that you mentioned and also check out your studio?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Not Your Mother's Piano Studio. Again, I know it's a mouthful. And then also
but it's
online.
Great. It does what it says on the tin, as they say. It's great.
Thank you. And then it's the same thing for, online, just notyourmotherspianostudio.com. There's a piano games library tab. You can just click on that. And my no printout playbook is just sitting there right at the top.
Definitely not a domain that anyone else would have been grabbing for, I don't think, Jessica. I think you're a safe.
Yes, I had no competition when I plugged it in.
Oh, look, it's been great to spend some time with you. Thank you for sharing those ideas and look forward to keeping in touch.
Thanks so much, Tim. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Jess and you'll go and check out some of her resources. It was heaps of fun to chat with her and hopefully her studio name will give you some ideas of the kinds of things that you can do differently in your own studio. Now, that's the end of the episode for this week. Next week on the podcast, we've got a two-part episode during which I'm going to announce the release of one of our latest ultimate guides. Now, this one is absolutely epic and I cannot wait to get it into your hands. We've worked on this for months and we've tested it with our top music certification cohort. Hello to all my cohortees. And this ultimate guide is all about intermediate music teaching, because what we know is that one of the challenges that all music teachers face is, let's say you probably start with some notebook beginners type activities, fun creative activities, no reading. Then you're going to go into a method book and do some reading, and you're going to stick with that method for a few years, probably, depending on how many levels you'd like to do. And then you enter this period, which I call the intermediate teaching wilderness, where you can really do whatever you want, which is great, but it's also, it can be really hard to know how to structure that time. So we've put together this ultimate guide, which we're going to share with you next week by sharing a couple of examples from Jana Williamson, who's one of our amazing team members here who creates our piece by piece intermediate repertoire teaching videos each month. And she helped me put together this ultimate teaching guide. And so she's going to be going through how she uses the guide with two example students, one next week and one the week after. So we'll let you know all about that, where to download the guide. It's completely free and it's actually one of our most epics. It's a lot of pages and checklists and sheets and goal setting and all of this kind of stuff. We really just want to give you some pathways through this wilderness because it can be really challenging to know exactly how best to approach it with your students. So that's coming up next week. I cannot wait to speak to you then. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me. See you soon. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.